ourselves, maybe say who we're with or why we're here, that would be awesome. I'm Lydia Sanders. I've been on the board for 7 years now. I'm also the homeless liaison for Battle Ground Schools, and I oversee the Family Resource Center and the foster care program for Battle Ground Schools as well.
I'm Megas Nichols. I'm on the Battle Ground School Board. My blueberry farm is open for you to get for orders. So. It's busy out there. And I've been on the board for a while, thanks to this person. Nancy, it will take a while to get
to know everything.
And I don't know everything.
Well, to get up to speed with this material, for sure.
Yeah.
It's very complicated.
But welcome.
Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Ann McInerney O'Loughlin. I'm the mayor pro tem for the city of Vancouver. I was on the cab for several years, stepped down for Ty Stover on his alternate today.
Good morning. Nancy Schultz, new member, not yet voting member. I'm thrilled to be here.
And I'm Janet. I'm with the county.
And I'm Judith Walsop, and I represent the District 2, the East County area, for, as a community member on the board.
I'm Bridget McClain, and I've been on a year now, and I represent District 2, which is north of the city.
And I'm Terry Dotson. I'm here as an independent observer.
Thank you, Terry. We're delighted you're here.
I'm Ann Blake Nichols, and I am a visitor.
I'm Will Renee.
No, we're related. And I work, I'm a tutor. I'm getting into a tutor contract.
She tutors a lot of the kids that are in our program. Mm-hmm. And Rebecca, we just went around and got started with introductions, but I haven't seen Rebecca yet, so should we hold off?
We don't have quorum, so okay. We can't do any action items, okay. But we could move on to the task force updates. Mm-hmm.
And this is Rebecca Royce. She's with the county in case everybody doesn't know.
Who has a sunburn?
Yes, I built a gazebo in my backyard this weekend and didn't wear any sunscreen. My fault. This is what happens. Don't bring it.
Right. So before we actually get into that, let's go ahead and I'd like to pass around the card for Shereen. Shereen has been in the hospital and she's recovering first from some things that are going on right now. And so if you'd like to, just sign that card for Shereen. We'd love to give it to her. And we can go ahead and get started with our task force updates, but without Shereen being here, the advocacy efforts.
They haven't met, so
yeah.
My question for the group, for those that have participated in the advocacy task force in the past, it was meant to be a pretty short-term task force. Is there a need to reconvene and maybe have different members on this group, or is it time that it's done what it should have done and we can move on and not have the task force any longer?
Does anyone have any thoughts about that?
What was their last task to be working on?
So the main thing that they wanted to do was provide the group ways that they could advocate, and they created that little map of here's some different ideas of how to advocate and what actually constitute advocation on behalf of the group or on behalf of the CAB. And that was provided, I think, at the January retreat.
Mm-hmm.
Was the last time that they had anything for the group.
Personally, I feel like it was effective to have it because, I mean, I've been on the board a long time, but it's always been a little bit gray as far as how far do we go with advocacy, what is our role exactly for each of us as individuals, what are the limits that we should be taking, things like that. And so especially with new members on board, I think it'd be great to, we don't necessarily have to meet, I don't think, but maybe use that plan and get that plan in motion for all of us so that it's clear. That's just my personal thought on it.
So why don't I plan on bringing that information to the next September,
okay.
The September meeting, the plan that we've brought
mm-hmm.
before,
mm-hmm.
and then we can address if we should have a meeting or go from there.
That sounds good to me.
Sounds good to me, too.
Yes.
Thank you, especially for new members, not knowing just what you can and can't do is really critical.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, too, we've had occasions where we want to advocate for things where the county can't advocate for things like stuff.
Right.
So then you've been doing the core.
information, but it would be neat if that was cited in the advocacy group.
Right.
And the person leading it might well coordinate advocacy day.
And what she's talking about is, for example, we get updates on things that are going on in the legislature, and she can't send it out. A county employee can't, but we can, when it comes to being an email, I can pass it on to the rest of the CAB members without any comments. Just here it is, take it and do what you want to with it. And so that's one of the things we've been doing for advocacy.
Yeah, I can provide education, but I can't do any calls for action. And so that's where it gets a little rough, and that's when we most need the CAB to step up, is when there's a call for action.
Right.
And so, unfortunately, I'm not able to provide that out to you guys. At least not on work email or work time.
But you can call me and say, maybe
I can.
So what do we think? Do we want to meet again? Do we want to just discuss it at the next meeting and decide where we go from there?
Why don't I go ahead and I'll schedule a meeting. I'm thinking it's the summertime and it's going to be kind of hard to get people together. Mm-hmm. So I'll bring the information to the September meeting, and then maybe we'll look at who should be on the task force, who wants to be involved in that at the September meeting, and then we'll have a meeting in September of just the task force.
That sounds good to me. Does anyone else have any other feedback or anything to add? Okay, cool. So then we can move on to the CNA, and I know Rebecca knows probably most about that.
Bridget has an update on it, and anything she doesn't have, then I can definitely.
Which is most of the problem. Rebecca's been doing a tremendous amount of work on this, first of all, because this is a huge achievement that we've done. And from Nancy, really, to update, this is something we do every few years that really tries to canvas priorities, which then define our priorities in allocating state or federal monies that are earmarked already for something specific. So the big event that we had recently at the library was well attended. And I thought exceptionally well organized. And we do have some feedback form satisfaction results, and this is primarily on the structure of the event rather than, you know, what people thought about the different issues that were presented. I do have, this is one of Rebecca's spreadsheets, and we rated pretty well, I think, on group discussions, interactive feedback questions. I don't quite understand data walk, because this is the one that concerned me. There's one with just one dissatisfied.
Yeah, so we were able to quantify two questions on the satisfaction survey that we provided to people who attended the feedback forum. The first one was, how likely are you to share what you learned today with your friends and family? Because that's what's important, is to get this information out into the community. And they could respond not likely, somewhat likely, and very likely. And so we quantified that 1, 2, 3, and we ended up with a 2.9. So the majority of them all said threes, and there were like two, maybe three twos. But out of the 27 responses, there were about 50 people that attended the event. 27 did filled out a survey. So that made me feel great, because that means they're willing to share the information. The other question we were able to quantify was your overall satisfaction with the event, and that was on a scale of 1 to 5, from very dissatisfied to very satisfied. And that's where Bridget was mentioning, somebody had mentioned they put a 1, and based on their other feedback, we don't know exactly what their experience was, but apparently they didn't give us anything else to really go on. They said they're very likely to share the information, but when we asked what did you learn from the event, the response was that no one knows the answer to poverty. So but everybody else answered 3, 4s, and 5s, and we got an average of 4.3, which I thought was really high for the overall satisfaction. We also asked a question regarding what was your favorite part of the the event. We did a brief presentation about what's going on and why we're doing the survey or why we're doing the needs assessment. We had the data walk, we had table groups discussions, and then we had some interactive feedback with the pulse pad. So some great information. So it was nice and we weren't just talking to people for 4 hours, so that was really nice. And so we got some really good feedback on that. The data walk got the most responses. Data walks are pretty new. I've seen a couple of them over the last year, which is what inspired us to do this one. And then the group discussions had 8 responses, and the interactive feedback had 7 responses.
So overall, there were 44% very satisfied and 41% satisfied. So we're really, that's 85%. So the results are put into the CNA, or the feedback.
Yes.
So it was a great way to collect community information.
And did anyone else attend that event?
Yeah.
And a few of us did.
Was that the library sitting down young? It was a wonderful meeting.
It was. I just thought it was so cool, those nifty little...
The pulse pads.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. That.
It was a great way to get feedback and make people feel involved.
And you know, I found some questions online that were like a little mythbusters and kind of, and people for most of the responses were correct. People knew, but there were a couple of them that were a little harder. But it was a way of helping dispel some myths about people living in poverty and stuff. But yeah. We got a lot of really good response and suggestions of wanting to have actually a longer meeting and more time to do some networking and things like that. One of the key things we want to keep in mind with this feedback is that this event had a very specific purpose. And that specific purpose was to get community feedback on the survey of needs that we did. So we in the future won't really expand upon it too much because we want to keep it at its original purpose, which is getting that feedback from the community.
Is there any other feedback from anyone who attended or questions from folks who didn't?
Great, Gator.
Say Chow, we use him for several things, and he's very reasonable priced.
It was good food.
It was. We made sure there was. He wanted to go a little fancier with his original thing, and I said, that's probably not what we need at a survey of needs for people who are low-income event. So he did a great job.
We also had meant to talk about, so we've already given you our feedback on the form itself.
Correct. So the group discussions, we collected all of that information. Everything from the form will be in the needs assessment. We'll use pieces of it in the actual report, but the kind of raw data will also be included as an exhibit. So all the components will be collected for the entire report will be there.
Excellent. Perfect. And really seriously, thank you so much for Rebecca because she went the extra mile to put that on and she put on a good show
and didn't do it alone.
Well attended. But it was really awesome. And Sam's idea with the little nifty thing.
Yes.
So thank you to our county staff and Jenna for getting the kennel all happening. So Rebecca has joined us. We already had a chance to go around and introduce ourselves. You want to take a second?
So I'm Rebecca Anderson, and I represent East County, District 2. I am a peer support specialist at Community Services Northwest, the mental health agency, and about myself. I got 3 kids. One's actually down in Oregon in Dog Corps. I'm so proud of her. She's actually made it like four weeks now. I'm so proud of her. And that's pretty much just, I've become more passionate about the homeless situation since I've become a peer support. And so I'm on a couple of other advisory boards also.
Thank you, Rebecca. So let's get back up and take care of a little bit of business. We need an approval of our main menu. Perfect. Thanks, Mavis. And we will go ahead and approve the May minutes. Oh, we need approval. So is that, how do I do that? Is there any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
You've actually got two choices. Well, you've got two choices. You can say, are there any corrections? Are there any corrections? Are there corrections? If there are, if you do that three times, and then it's approved.
Oh,
it makes corrections.
Okay.
Or you can ask for a vote.
Okay. So we have a vote. We already did. We're good. We'll approve the amendments. We all know I'm still learning parliamentary procedure, and it's not my favorite.
But we'll just, she's doing very well.
We'll take it as we go. So, something that is probably more important, though, is the strategic plan that Rebecca sent out to everyone, and we do need to ask for an approval of that. And so that's why she sent it out ahead of time so that we could all review it. If anyone had any edits or any other discussion points, we can chat about them, and then we will be looking for a motion to approve those.
So first I want to apologize. Normally I try to give you a report and let you have time and then come back at the next meeting to actually adopt it. We are on a very strict deadline. Having the board adopt the strategic plan that was put together by the Department of Community Services is one of those requirements for the organizational standards. We have to have this done before August. Originally it was September, but Commerce has come back and asked us to get it done by August. So that we don't end up in a technical assistance plan, which would get reported to the federal, at the state level, to the federal HHS, Department of Human Services. So the staff have been working on this for about the last 3 years, and we've brought you components of this as we've gone along. So we talked about the mission, vision, and values. I brought in the next steps, which is at the end of the report. And so we've been filling in the gaps, and this has been a staff-led project for the last 3 years. We wanted to show the ties to the county's mission, vision, and strategic plan, or strategic actions, and we talk about the process that we've done. One of the components in the planning process is the ROMA cycle, which is Results-Oriented Management and Accountability. Both Samantha and I are nationally certified ROMA trainers, and so we want to have to show how we use that in all of our planning processes. And so we talk a little bit about what that is in this report. We talk about the community needs assessment and the survey that we did and what the needs were, so that we can show that those are some of the goals that we're going to be working towards, or things that were identified as needs for our low-income population here in Clark County. We then talk about how we develop the goals. And so we, as a staff, came up with four theme areas. One is well-being, one is economic advancement, one is a resilient community, and the fourth is housing stability. And so when we designed the report, we went around those themes as the main guiding point for creating this document. So you'll see in there each of the four themes and how they tie to the county's strategic action, what our overarching goal or outcome for that theme is, and there's a short story about where we're starting at, what we've done recently to really start working towards that. So, for example, in housing stability, you'll see a picture of Lincoln Place, and that's a brand new 30-unit facility for people who are chronically homeless with severe disabilities. And so that was just completed in 2016, and it's a good start.
Can you
have
them? No,
I haven't. Are you looking at the old one?
Yeah, I don't have.
Rebecca, that brings up a question. Has there been changes to it since you sent out the draft on Wednesday?
So there's been slight changes since the one I emailed out. As I mentioned, we were working on those recent work toward the outcomes. And there's been a couple of very minor wording changes, nothing that changes anything. There was a typo, that type of thing, that we fixed. In each of the sections, you'll also see the programs that we're working towards. So, for example, on page 12, these are the programs that are, where the county is over, is going through a priority-based budgeting process. And in that, they take all of the different funding that we receive and they put it into all of these little categories. And that's what you'll see on this page, is all the different categories that would help support housing stability. And so there's a link to our priority-based budgeting, the county strategic actions, community needs assessment, and our Roma cycle, all in our strategic plan.
Why is your name not on the acknowledgement?
Because this was put together by the team leads in our department. So there was one lead for each of the themes, and I was not a lead. So it was all put together by them.
And we said you have to have an acknowledgement in the annual report.
That's on this one.
What I like about it is the outcome based is measurable.
Yep.
It's something that you, as you've done that in the other document, this one,
mm-hmm.
I love that. I love that having something that would say, we not just that we trained 1,000 people, but of those 1,000 people, 50 got jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the outcome. What good did the training do? Train 1,000 and no one gets a job. So.
Exactly.
So I think that outcome base is really crucial. And I like the way these themes each have one very measurable thing.
Back up on page 12, all of these programs, are each one of these spelled out on a website somewhere under community?
So they're not, I don't believe they're on the website. So what we did was all the different types of programs that we support, we currently support, fall into these categories, these names. So, for example, temporary housing would be the support we do for second step housing, the transitional housing program. There's the emergency shelters that we support. In the report to the community, we break down all of the different, all of the different programs that we actually fund through this board. This strategic plan is based on our entire department. So there's things from our alcohol and drug unit, from our developmental disabilities unit. Everything about the programs is on the website, but I don't know if they specifically break down what agency is doing.
Are there definitions for these items?
There will be. There is in the priority-based budgeting document that they're putting together that's still in draft form. We're working with a technical writer. So it does go into more detail for that. But we had direction to make sure we included it in the strategic plan.
Great, thank you.
It's a good point, though, to make it understandable for lay people who don't understand all the acronyms and all the terms.
These have gone through several iterations, and they're trying to make them as self-explanatory as possible. But we understand that there's things that we do that isn't still kind of.
It would be neat later on, I mean, after this document's adopted and the priority-based budgeting has some results, is to link from here to, on the web maybe, to the web program descriptions that are funded. Some of them may be through us, but some of them through this group, and some may be other funding streams, Medicaid or whatever.
Yeah.
But for the county, it would be good to do that.
I'm wondering if there would be a way to do that. And the only reason I question it is because there's some of them that cross programs. So when you look at our website, you see the Department of Community Services, and then you see Community Action, and then there's information there. Or you see our department, and then Behavioral Health.
Right.
And some of them will cross over. And one example is our Alcohol and Drug Unit does ATR, which is time-limited rental assistance. But we also do time-limited rental assistance in our rapid rehousing programs. So I can talk to the team and see if they have any ideas of how to do that. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't.
It's too complicated that way. Yeah.
Janet, have you heard any word? Are we going to place in the department's website anything about the priority-based budgeting, if there will be a special page?
I haven't heard anything about adding it, but I don't see why we couldn't add a page that lists that, you know, If
it
you want to, if
yeah.
we wanted this, you know, you could put TSH in the programs that fall under it. You could put, you know, or however broad or narrow of category you want, you know, as its own page.
That sounds really good. I think the more transparent we can be to the general public where money is actually being spent.
I would hesitate to put in each of the programs that link under those
mm-hmm.
in this document because this is a 5-year
mm-hmm.
and every 3 years
It'll
we
change.
Do our process, which changes, so then it wouldn't be accurate.
So categories then.
What we will do, and we could include that, is each year we're going to do an update to the strategic plan, and we'll bring that to the board. And that's where we're going to get a little bit more into the details. Like, this is what we did this year to meet this goal. And so we'll have it in those annual updates. It just won't be in the main. We want this to be broad so that we can put all of the myriad of things that we're doing underneath it. We can report to it. We don't want to restrict ourselves too much.
That makes sense.
A question, if we were to say, no, we don't like this, and we disapprove it today, what would be the result?
I would have a heart attack. So what would happen is we would go into a technical assistance plan with Commerce, and that will get reported to OCS, the Office of Community Services, which is part of HHS, the Housing and Human Services, or Health and Human Services Federal Department. And then we have a limited time where we would need to, the board would then be asked to create its own strategic plan, which is not the direction that Vanessa has asked us to go in. And so we would have to get her buy-off, then do an entire strategic planning process just for this board.
Which is why you sent this out ahead of time so that we know when we got here what we want to do.
Yes.
When I look at this, I think, just as a document, I think, okay, if I'm a lay person, I look and I've got all these programs, we don't really have a problem then. And sometimes some of these are fairly limited in terms of how many they're serving. So I guess I understand what you're saying about this is a long-term plan or a general thing. But somehow, if you could quantify this serves this many clients, this serves this many clients, I might, as a lay person, say, okay, this is a small part and it's barely touching the services, but.
So that'll be that annual update.
Okay.
So that's when we'll go into details as far as how many people were served in these different categories to meet that overarching outcome.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to limit ourselves in this, saying it's only going to serve 20 people or it'll serve 100 people in a strategic plan. It's your vision for the next 5 years, where are we going, where do we want to go, what outcomes, the really big picture, that's what this report is meant to be.
It makes sense that it's more general and more broad
mm-hmm.
from that sense, but it really does beg the point about providing as much transparency as we can, so I think anywhere that we can, especially on the website, maybe not as part of this, but as a yearly update or even a 3-year update, you know.
Yeah, we're required to do an annual update.
Yeah.
So that will happen. You will see that each year. So I'll come back with a report. It'll be different from the report to the community. It'll be specific to the strategic plan, and it will show this is what we've been doing to meet our goals in our 5-year plan.
I think it would be important. I mean, not in this report, but long-term, for example, because I read that they're talking about taking away revitalization or help for low-income households. If you do that by year, you can track, okay, we did 10 this year, but we can only do 5 next year, that kind of thing, so that it speaks to the need for service long-term.
Yes.
So I noticed on page 3 at the bottom, it does say about priority-based budgeting, and it says additional detail on these budget categories, et cetera, will be shown in the appendix of this plan.
So
they not yet... It's not yet completed.
Correct. Yes.
So are we going to be in trouble on that?
No.
Okay.
No, we will have that as soon as it's done. Some of our management has been on vacation, and so they haven't been able to finalize that spreadsheet, and that's what will tie all the different programs and the definitions of the priority-based, the definitions to each of those.
I'm getting distracted by the establishment of priorities.
Have they solicited input from priorities? Has it been before council and the public here?
No, not yet.
So there are establishing priorities.
Okay.
Well, and at this point, so the process that's going to be the appendix to this, that it, what it's basically going, it's not going to be in any priority ranking. All it is taking all of the funding that we have in under our department, and it's put in there with, this is what the program is, so time-limited rental assistance, and then it has a brief description of what that is. And then there's a couple of other columns, and I apologize, I don't know that spreadsheet very well because it's really been at the management level, not at staff level, but it does go into more detail. But it's nothing's ranked. There's, it's just a listing of this. Here's all of the funding that we receive in all of the
But at some point, somebody's going to...
At the county level, they will prioritize. They will do that, prioritizing.
The recommendations, if they... they have to cut 10% across the board in some way or other, they will. And at that point, I think our advocacy group may need to be active.
And okay, and then one thing to keep in mind also is the a lot of the funding that we get, specifically in this group, but also in our department, is earmarked. So our house bill money, our document reporting fees, can only be used for house, homeless services. Mm-hmm. So the county cannot cut that fund. They don't have any authority to cut the fund. It's all at the state level for how much we're doing the reporting fees. But they also cannot take that money and move it anywhere else. It has to be directed to homeless services. Mm-hmm. One fund that we do oversee that they could take away is the Human Services Fund. So that one is a general fund. It comes from property taxes. It's a very small amount of what we work with in our unit and stuff, but it's very important because it's very flexible and it helps us with those upstream types of programs. Even when they do the priority-based, the prioritization, the most of our funding is grant-funded, has a specific requirement to it. It can't be taken away. Even if they want to, they don't.
So Mavis made a motion to go ahead and adopt our strategic plan. Do we have a second?
Yes.
Okay. And is there any further discussion? Okay. So then all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
And any opposed? Okay. So this motion passes. So we will go ahead and...
Thank you so much.
Yay! Rebecca won a heart attack.
Didn't want that.
No. Very good. Thank you, everyone. And we have a legislative update, Rebecca, that's on your plate
as
well.
Me. So normally Michael would go over this with that he's in Ecuador.
Oh.
So it's a little hard for him to be here today. At the state level, I had sent out an email letting you know from the Council from the Homeless that House Bill 1570 failed at the state level. However, House Bill, I think it was 5254, I could be wrong, did pass, and basically what it does is it extends the House Bills for 4 years. It also does not allow the local governments the opportunity to increase the recording fee amounts. So basically it's status quo for the next 4 years. You'll see about 2 years we're really going to start heading, trying to have this conversation again to eliminate the sunset on the House Bill, on the document recording. We also have a budget. It passed at the very last minute on June 30th from the state. They are currently working on sending us updated budget sheets, and then we'll send that out to all the programs that are affected, specifically for the Consolidated Homeless Grant. That is a very specific one-year grant. It's on a the state fiscal year, which ends in June. So a few of our agencies are working without it, knowing that they'll be reimbursed, but we're working very quickly to get those taken care of, and because the budget passed, we know there will be funds to reimburse them. On the federal level, Congress is working on their budgets. The House released their transportation, housing, and urban development draft budget just yesterday or the day before, and doesn't affect us
in this group, but it does affect our department. That's where our community development block grant and our home funds come from. And they have proposed basically $100 million drop from fiscal year 2017. And that's actually really great news, because that in the president's skinny budget, he had eliminated the CDBG program and the home program. So having the House come back and say, no, we want to fund these programs, there'll be a slight reduction, is basically telling the president that we're not going to stand for these programs to be eliminated. So it's good news, bad that it's getting cut, but good that it's still in the budget itself. I haven't seen anything specifically about the community services block grant yet, but if they're holding strong on community development block grant, there's a good chance they're going to hold strong on community services block grant. CSBG has a very strong bipartisan support, so there's a good chance that it'll be there. We just don't know what it's going to look like, if there's what cuts will happen on that. So we're just going to have to wait and see. There's word that there'll be a lot of fighting about the caps on the spending, and specifically about the defense funds, because President Trump would like to have a lot more funding in defense, which means discretionary funds on our side would be reduced if the caps are not lifted or increased. So it's a wait and see pattern at both the, specifically at the federal level, but we'll just chug along. And we have our local funds, so we know that that'll be carrying us through for a little while at least.
So just on a really broad level, I don't know if you'll know this off the top of your head, but just kind of rough percentage-wise, how much of our dollars are fed in state and local?
Actually, in the community, the report to the community, it shows, and we actually are about a third each.
Right, yeah. I just didn't know if that had changed with these.
No, we've held pretty strong in that approximately a third of each funding. For example, life is eliminated, which is one of them that has been eliminated in the president's budget, that's a federal fund, and so that would greatly reduce that or skew where the funding comes from. So two-thirds of our funding is fairly stable.
Any other discussion or questions from anyone? So then we'll move on to go ahead and discuss the report to the community, so we can dive into that as well.
So this is the report that we do each year. It's our fun report to the community. This is just to show all the great work that we've been doing over the past year. So please keep in mind that this is 2016 information. Anything that's happened in 2017 isn't discussed.
And your pictures are in here. Most of you.
Where's Rebecca's?
In the back. So you have an old version, I think.
Oh, I'll use this one.
So this one is ready to go. It's draft only because it's not been adopted by the board. But if there's anything that you see, if there's any typos or anything that you'd like to see added or changed, then let me know and we can work on getting that information in here. One of the requests very redesigned from what we've done in the past. So about every 3 years, because of our funding cycles, we like to redesign the report to the community, just because we don't want to get stale and old and all of that. So this one is completely revamped. There's a lot of components that have stayed the same. You know, talking about community action has not changed. The objectives of our community action and the promise of community action haven't changed. But when we looked at some other examples, we noticed that a lot of them had pictures of their board. And so we thought it would be fun to put your guys' pictures in so people can know who's on our board. This is one of those that you'll see. It depends on, this is 2016. So Rebecca didn't start until November. And so we decided to keep Jessica's picture in here because she was on the board for the majority of 2016, or at least over half of the year, and so that's why her picture is in here instead of Rebecca's, but Rebecca's will be added for next year. And we thought the community partners page used to be kind of tucked in the back. We really wanted to highlight it. We have a lot of partners, so we brought it towards the front of the report, so it's not the hidden thing in there. We condensed down all the funding information. So we have a lot of information in this one table. If you look below the table, there's just a little bit of information about how that makeup is of the federal, state, and local funding. We also put the acronyms down below so that you guys can see the what those stand for. We couldn't fit them in the table itself,
right?
So we put them below.
Yeah, that's great. I really like that because it really just makes it simple for everyone.
We went really colorful.
Yeah,
we've been pretty drab in the past.
We got some pop.
Naming on me, creating reports, but we went very colorful this time. We've always done the value of volunteers, but now we have a picture with it. So you'll notice throughout the report there's more pictures, more facts, more visuals to look at. We have the community needs assessment updated from the survey of needs information. So this is just a snapshot of some of the information from the survey of needs. And this was all information that was presented at the community forum. One of the other ideas that we had that will be in the full needs assessment is a community snapshot. So when we do our full needs assessment, we want to talk about what the entire community looks like. And we thought, well, that would be interesting to put in our report to the community. You're seeing what the survey is saying for people who are low income, but let's talk just a little bit about what's going on in our community. So you'll see that on pages 10 and 11, just some quick information about information in here in Clark County.
One of the reasons that's important to me is because of the meldings of those groups. The people who are up here who never see people who are down here. And I think when you put something like this in, it kind of looks like, hey, wait a minute, maybe there's some people I should be concerned about that I don't know about because they're not in my circle. I like having that snapshot in there very much.
Especially the one about the number of hours of minimum wage you have to work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, didn't that 74? 74 hours.
I have a question, Rebecca, though. On the income graph?
Oh, on the needs survey?
Mm-hmm. Is that the number of people who said that they had a concern about income, or is that how much money they made? Or
that's the number of people who responded that they have that type of income.
So can we label that somehow or some way?
Yeah.
So it makes it clear that that's what that means? That would be cool just to kind of clear that up.
Yeah, I don't understand. Yeah.
If we just label that, I think we'll be okay.
So across the top axis is
what? The number of people. So if you look at employment, 393 responders indicated that they had income from employment. 383 indicated they had income from SSI or SSDI.
So it's not that's
not
their expressing that's the their need or okay.
We correct. Just, no, this is their current demographic.
Okay.
So yeah, we can make sure that's
Probably all of them.
Yeah.
Just so it's more. Income of responders.
Right, and you can say
race of responders.
Type of household income or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we can get a little more clear on this.
And then will we have a chance to review it again before we approve it?
Yeah, I'll bring a final draft to the September meeting for adoption.
Okay, great.
On the next page, under population, there's the word approximately.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem to jive with the sentence before.
I bet you that just got, we were moving stuff around and it just got left in there. Thank you.
Good probably, Terry.
When you look at the same thing 400 times, you
right.
scan the word thing. So
yeah.
That's why we always like to have severalized on the document.
How come, aggression isn't included in the income area? Is that because it's in a different county? Income area, you talk about Portland, Vancouver, Hillsboro.
This is HUD's statistical area,
oh.
Metropolitan statistical area.
All right. Be interesting to see what the unemployment rate is in 2017.
Mm-hmm. The unemployment rate has gone down slightly. It's hovering around that 5%.
I'm interleaving.
Under Anchor 2, when we run Clark County numbers on the size of employer, school districts are always hiding there, but I don't see.
So we looked, and actually, schools aren't one of the top employers. You had mentioned that at the meeting, and I took that back, and Sam and I were looking at it, and
that's the part.
It was
in the charts for Clark County. Maybe it's big in the census area. Maybe it isn't in Portland.
I don't remember. Samantha was doing this research, and I remember she found information, and I think the information she was going on was based on averages, and the average was lower. It wasn't as high as the others.
So is that is that census?
Oh yeah.
Well, anyway, it does.
That would make sense.
ESD is one of the largest employers.
But when you look at them as a whole, when you're looking at wholesale and retail trades and healthcare and social assistance, so you have a lot of businesses that are employed.
Right, I saw you.
So
maybe the biggest.
They don't fall under.
Yeah, it's kind of a useless sentence. This is so broad.
Which sentence are you on?
The greatest number of employees. I mean, it's so broad that it doesn't really.
Your income?
Yes, just the last sentence.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't matter. It's
also, so would schools be under government?
I believe they had them pulled out under education.
And if we wanted to go even bigger and look at like WASU and college, and,
it just went. It's general. It's not. Right. It doesn't go into the specific details. It just looks at it in general.
I think if you wanted,
I agree.
We need to.
Seems like a very good rate of high school graduation. 91%. I think would be rather high compared to a lot of areas. And also the 28%, when you consider that only, I think it's 33% or something like that, of high school students go on for advanced degrees, you have 28% having obtained a bachelor's degree, not just an AA, but a bachelor's or higher, is pretty high.
It doesn't have, even under the housing, something about us being, Clark County being one of the highest.
Because it's not in 2016.
But in 2016, we were at the lowest vacancy rate in.
It's a good point.
In the country?
No.
County?
Nope.
State?
Not even the state. There are several counties in the state that were under 1% vacancy.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
So although we're at like 1.8, which is very low in its own right. When we're comparing it.
I remember the 2% number just shows you need to check out the data.
No, most counties are under 3% in Washington state. And there are actually some. There's one, I can't remember who, it's a rural county, and I can't remember which one it is, that was at a 0% vacancy rate. Yeah, they have no units at all available.
Wow.
There, as soon as somebody moves out, the next day somebody's in. I mean, it's so crazy.
But even though we may not have been the lowest, can we put a statement in there that does give what we were?
Yeah.
Or at least addressing it. So we could say something to the effect of, we reached a low of 1.8% or something like that. Hey, I do want to, I think we should go back to the school employees though, not that I'm biased, but I can
email out the information
that
shows if that helps you guys with that.
because I just feel like we are major, I mean, school districts are major employers.
Yeah, and I think it's the report that the area, it must be the state area economist gives. Doesn't he give it every month or so, and they run it on the front page of the paper regarding the increase and decrease in various employment fields, and has numbers there. So I guess it's the source of your data.
Yeah, I'm not sure where Sam had gotten this. But
if this is HUD, I mean, if this is census data you're looking at, the census in 2000 updated with the ACS every year or so, but that's not on detailed information. So the census data versus
estimates.
State data can be quite different.
I think part of it might have to do with the definition of the employer, because if you look at a school district, take Battle Run, because I know that Battle Run Public Schools is the largest employer in the area. That doesn't mean it employs a greater percentage of the people. It just simply means that if you look at Boeing employs this many people, that's the largest employer. They've got X number of people. They've got the largest employee number in the area. But that doesn't mean that over 50% of the population
as
a single employer. Then school districts are probably the largest single employer in the area, but that doesn't mean that they employ more people than anybody else put together.
Yeah. Sure. And I think that's what, because I know the information that Sam had seen, she said it was talking about the average number of employees. And I don't know exactly how they break that down. So I'll have her pull that information and I can send it out.
We have something like 1,900 employees in our school district.
Yeah.
And maybe it's because some of them work 30 days or 10 months.
Yeah.
That could play.
I'll also look at the state economist info and see.
Okay.
So this next page looks very similar to the one in the strategic plan. It talks about aroma cycle because that's important to community action. And we wanted to tie this into the county's vision, and we'll see the same outcome themes, and that's how we designed this report, was based on those outcome themes. But it's very specific to what we do under the purview of the CAB. So the first one is well-being, and the YWCA Safe Choice Program, Shares Hunger Response Program, and the LIHEAP Program all fall under this category. So you'll see some cute kids eating some food from Shares Summer Meal Program. That was probably our favorite picture out of all of them that they sent over to us. And you'll see a couple of success stories for participants in those programs. Then we have the economic advancement, and there's multiple programs that fall under this theme, which makes sense because that's a lot of what we do if we're trying to promote self-sufficiency. So we want to have those economic advancement type of programs. Samia is pictured at the bottom, and she went back to school with the help of the IDA program, so that's why she's kind of featured in there. The next category is the resilient community results. This one's a little bit harder for us under the purview of the CAB. What you would see in the strategic plan is our community development block grant, where we do parks and we do street improvements and other programs such as behavioral health programs fall under that. Well, we don't fund specifically those programs. So there's a little bit of information in that.
I like that trauma-informed
piece
in there. That was, to me, that coordination is so important.
Yeah, and that's a special grant that we got from the state for the Community Services Block Grant to work with two other community action agencies in our area to become trauma-informed, and we just finished that up.
It really put right on that resilient community results.
And then you'll see the biggest plate, there's two pages designated for the housing stability, because that's really been a big goal of what's under the purview of the CAP. And we kind of broke it down into different types of housing that we provide. On the first page, on page 20, you'll see where we wanted to give some definitions about the types of assistance, so you'll see definitions of rapid rehousing, permanent supported housing, transitional housing, and convention assistance. And then we go into the different types of assistance, emergency, shelter, and outreach, permanent supported housing. You'll recognize that picture. We'll use it as much as we possibly can. Rapid rehousing, where we have multiple programs, and then other housing outcomes. This is the things that we do that are all regarding household stability that don't necessarily serve individuals. So our HMIS program, we fund that, and that helps us know what the need is in the community and how many people we're serving, but we're not actually serving people specifically for that program. Or all of the planning and outreach that the Council for the Homeless does regarding homeless services in our community.
So just one quick comment. This guy is not connected to the tax.
No.
So, but it looks
we don't have a success story specifically for this gentleman.
So we even need a little line here, because otherwise it looks
Did we miss that? Because we both said it.
Yeah,
just have
exactly.
That. Sorry. Yep, yeah. Caption.
It just looks like we're talking about Julie and
yeah.
He might not like that.
Yeah, he might not like that. Yes, we will make that happen for that. See, that's why we have you guys take a look at this. And then as requested, because we put your pictures in there, the executive team requested that our pictures be on the report also. So you'll
and you've got glasses on.
I do. That is my employment. Right there,
so
you can go.
Doesn't look
like
it's free. Yes. Was that like straight out of high school? That wasn't
straight
out of high school.
No.
That
was in 2008.
You could get a
year. We could.
One of the things that makes this document very powerful, is the success stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's what we want to report.
And it makes it interesting to read it.
Yeah.
It'll attract people to be and see how this works.
And this names specific programs, so it gets more into the
details. The last version we had, we didn't really have a lot of outcomes or even outputs in it. We talked about, these are the types of programs that we do and these are the programs that we're funding under those categories, but it didn't really have a whole lot of outcomes. And we wanted to make sure that we included that information in here so that we can really have a report to the community that said this is what we did last year. Look at all the good work we did.
I have a question. Under economic advancement results, Columbia River Mental Health, is Hope Change, Employment Navigator, and Partners in Careers, are they like subcontractors?
Correct. So we don't do direct services. We work with nonprofits to do the work for us.
Okay. So there another one I think they use is Clearview.
And that's not funded by us.
Okay.
Yeah. So this will only have what we actually fund.
Okay. All right.
It's an interesting thought because somewhere there should be a line in here that what we fund is only a small part of the huge community effort put by nonprofits and social service agencies and businesses to support a healthy community.
Mm-hmm.
That means, somewhere in that, because it is misleading to the community when we look at this, we think those are the only housing programs we have, or that SHARE only gets money from this when they have, their own grants and fundraising, or Columbia River, so when they're raising money. So just some sort of generic, even right at the beginning, just to say this is just a picture of what we're grateful to.
Well, if you go back to page 18, I think Lydia has something to share.
Oh, this was
maybe share.
This was just interesting. So we just opened our Family Resource Center for Battleground Schools in October of last year. And I put together a similar report that looked at all of the phone calls we've taken and all the rest of it. And we have taken, just in our little resource center, that's right around 6,000 phone calls since October, this last year.
Wow.
And 211 has, it's like 8,362 for the whole year. So just those, I was just shocked by Wow.
Those well, numbers. These are unduplicated.
Right. Well, in ours, we just, that's just the number of them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You probably don't have 6,000
right.
independent people calling.
Yeah, no.
But
yeah.
No, it's, yeah, they get a lot of, and they actually now they get quite a few that go to the website or
mm-hmm.
to their app.
Sure.
Or call their
sure.
their text line mm-hmm. and stuff. So that it's
right.
still the majority is just phone calls.
Then maybe
and
that needs to say that these are say a call center. From different individuals called. And this is not just 8,000 calls, but it's 8,000 different people who called. That may need to be said.
We can say unduplicated.
And that does remind me, this graphic is going to change. This is only from January through March 2016, because they do quarterly reports, and they report on a different year for this specific report that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they're no longer using this program that creates this graphic. And so I will be getting actually all of 2016 information.
Okay.
It'll break it down into these different categories, but it'll be more of a bar chart instead of this one graphic, which I'm kind of sad about. But
well, I think
yeah.
having that duplicated versus non-duplicated
yes.
is important.
Do non-social services people know the word, understand what it means when you say
unduplicated?
I mean, it's
yeah.
kind of a
right.
Yeah, that's how you say for that many different
people.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. We all discussed that well for now.
Yeah,
we
I'll make the changes
and
I'll send out the information about the employment.
Okay. So with our meetings now at 2 hours, how does everybody feel? Is everybody going to get up for a minute and walk around, or is everybody going to want to plow through?
I'm going to look bad.
Okay. So let's just take like a 3 minute
what?
Quick
do we have to take action on this?
No. Just to discuss it. So why don't we just take a little 3 minute break if you want to get coffee or run to the restroom. So that you can give everybody a minute. Oh, I haven't been back there.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know, but I didn't get your email. I'm trying really hard not to check my email.
So,
what
do you
need?
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. She, she has a I don't know if she's thinking any more about it. She hasn't for a long time, but she has Jake and Todd for her too when she's
well, and he's so it's great having him.
She did. She
burned
her
so
hair
off.
So she
finds every little
it.
Thing.
I
awesome.
Which
is
awesome. Like super expensive highlights.
Because it
yeah.
really helps
I mean, for
us.
Christy, it cost her the cost of
yeah.
that. So.
Yeah.
But we should be in town. Yeah.
Really good.
And as they say, take 15 minutes. First thing in the morning, or after dinner.
Yeah, it'll be after dinner because she doesn't get up. She
no, I do that. Probably. That's what I do. Good. I'll
be right.
Yep.
Next
yeah.
Material is actually pretty interesting because this is
kind of a time and all dollars
are going and where money is actually.
That way she can show her facility more.
And the number
yeah.
of
but yeah,
folks
yes, she's
and all the rest of that.
She's good for doing stuff like that.
It's not my just as last. It's not a good way.
Yeah. No, she's actually she's saving money to get away from her sister. She's raising money right now. I told her I would not pay for the benefit. And it's $400. So she's raising money right now.
It's so funny because most parents say that when it starts, and then as they get closer and closer to the day, you're spending your time already getting yeah. that everywhere. Parents go, oh, the blessing class, I'll talk to this.
Well,
I
so the deal
my
I made. Mouth
right now, it's safely
I know. The deal I made with her is I'm not paying for driver's ed. You have to pay for that because I'm paying for the insurance that's going to double
right.
every month. So that was the deal then, that we made. So she's
oh,
raising
thank
money.
You.
Yeah. So she turns 15 in October. She's actually starting to commission some art
work that she's doing.
So that people will ask her to draw something. And she made, she did one up long ago.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Thank you. All right. While everybody's finishing up, Rebecca, do you want to go ahead and we can start talking about the summary report?
Yeah, so you'll recognize this planning report. It's one that we've been doing for a while now. We're now looking at 2017, so one of the major changes you'll see with this report versus the last year's is that you'll still see the annual proposed goals, but we now have the total for 2016 and then the year-to-date for 2017. So you can kind of compare how they're doing to how they were doing last year and that type of thing. The budget is now increased to what their two-year budget is. So what we're looking for right now is that they're around that 50% mark, a little over. There is the Community Housing Resource Center is a little under. They underspent in 2016 because it's a two-year contract. We just let them roll over, so they'll have it to spend in 2017. The other one is Impact Northwest with their Rapid Rehousing Program. And this was a new program for them last year, but they are up and running, and they should be catching up pretty quick. It's the same with their permanent supportive housing program. There's been a lot of changes in funding with those that are funded with our community housing or the consolidated homeless grant because we're trying to spend out funds. So there's you'll see some switching around in the next couple of months where we moved funds out and now we're moving the funds back in just so that we make sure that all the funding is not spent to the state. The Salvation Army Emergency Funds, that's that special program that's only used for households are being evicted due to unsafe living conditions, so that rarely gets used. And the Share Rentwell program, I'm not sure why they're underspent, and Michael wasn't here for me to inquire about that one, so unfortunately I don't know what's going on with that program. I do know, can give you an update with the IDA program with SHARE, that the fiscal year 2017 federal budget, there were only, I believe, two programs that got cut, and one of them was the AFI grant, which is, I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but it basically our funding was matched to that funding so that they could do, there was a requirement of the federal funds to have a local match, and so that's what our funds did. Their funding ended. However, it's a two-year program. We have let them know that we will continue to fund them throughout this contract, so through 2017. That way they can continue to do any case management that's needed and to help all the programs that are still in, or all the households that are still in the program, in the two-year program. And they can also do new households if they like, specifically with education, because it's so quick. That money goes in and goes out pretty quickly, so it's, they don't stay for the 2 years. They have, the case manager for that program has moved on to another position, and they've put this program underneath their Rentwell, the case manager that was doing the Rentwell program, because there's minimal work that needs to be done with the IDA program now that they're not actively recruiting new households.
But some of these programs that are up in the 85% area, even 70%, how are they going to do okay come the end of the year? Are they going to be out of money?
Which ones are you looking at?
Let's see.
Share.
85%. Another Share, the FAST program, is at 69%.
So these, that's the Consolidated Homeless Grant. And these are ones that we needed them to spend out. So you'll see the, we have given them funding. This is one of those that we work on our end and that you guys don't see as much, where we have some house bill money that we put in to kind of supplement them before we get the new Consolidated Homeless Grant funding.
And so the end of the Consolidated Homeless Grant is June, or was June.
Okay.
So this report is the first quarter.
Right.
So there's a lot of these that will be
okay.
Right up at that
edge. So they're not going to be laying off their staff.
They will get, we'll modify their contract once we have our new budget from Commerce, which I was told today that we'd have either today or tomorrow. So then we'll modify their contracts, give them their new money. That's the hard part, is a lot of our funds are calendar year, and some of them are on the state fiscal year, and some of them, like ESG, have our federal fiscal year, and we try to marry it all together and use local funds to kind of fill in the gaps to kind of make it all work.
As long as they'll be okay. And they won't
yes,
be.
They are going to be completely fine. And if there's any changes to programs ending, like the IDA program, unless they figure out another way of getting other funds, that program probably won't be coming back for additional funds. Unfortunately, it's a good program.
Okay, any other discussion about that? We'd love to move on and hear from Vicki and the Hope Change Program, if you're ready for us, Vicki.
Well, I am, and I have brought Dave Moore. Dave Moore is like the foundation of the Hope Change program, so he's actually going to talk about the program. Hope Change is part of Columbia River Mental Health Services, and so Columbia River Mental Health has about 250 employees. Clearview Employment Services is the employment arm of Columbia River Mental Health, which has 3 employment programs. And so we're one of those employment programs. So it's kind of like we're under that umbrella. Myself, I've been with Columbia River Mental Health for over 20 years. And that entire time I've been working with folks that have barriers to employment. And so that's kind of what I've dedicated myself to. I also work with a lot of the mental health clients. But I'm going to let Dave talk about this program because he is the one that makes it work.
Probably shouldn't have drank so much coffee. Well, thank you for having us here and letting us present our program to you. I've been working with the Clearview program for about 2.5 years, maybe?
No.
Something like that. It's been a learning experience for me along the way, and I really like working for the program, and I'm 100% behind the program and what it does for this community. So, the first page is who we serve. And, as we get older, we gotta put our glasses on for this stuff. All right, who we serve. To be eligible for the program, an individual must have documentation providing a disability as defined by, it's Clark County's definition of disability, as well as I'm sure it goes to the statewide and nationwide as well. Below a set income standards, that's 125% below poverty set by HUD and other agencies. Individuals with mental health issues are in sustained drug and alcohol recovery, have developmental and physical disabilities, which can be barriers to employment. About 1/3 of co-occurring conditions necessitating assistance to obtain community employment. So we work with people that have disabilities. That's our niche. A couple years ago, we were working with everybody that was homeless, and we moved to this program here, and it's been working quite well. It put us in a different situation, and it's definitely educated me in the community.
Can
as well.
I ask a quick question?
Yes,
ma'am. Sustained drug and alcohol recovery? What does it sustained mean?
That's an interesting question. Coming from a drug and alcohol background, and I spent years and years in drug and alcohol services and across the United States, actually. Somebody that's working on their recovery, continually working on their recovery, and places like Lifeline Connection and things like that, where they're really actively involved in becoming, I guess what we're looking for is sober, and since our community and our state as well has changed its outlook on some drug and alcohol issues, you know, so as we have to change along with that, and so helping people that have come from use to abuse sustain their abuse to more use, I guess, you know, it's lightening them it up a little bit. So does that make sense? Does that answer your question, or could I?
Yeah. You don't put a time limit on it, in networks.
Yeah, you know, it's not my issue. You know, I like having a time limit on, you know, how long people should be in recovery and what our outcomes could be.
I think we have established at least 3 months of sobriety. I believe that's what we've talked about.
Yeah. And what does that look
like? Then if someone, if we're helping them look for a job and they relapse, they have to kind of go back to square one and regain that sobriety. And I mean drugs or alcohol sobriety, before we would be able to engage with them again. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
That's why she missed it. All right. So our community partners and the sites that we serve the whole community, but there's certain monthly locations that we show up with and we partner with. And that's the Clark County Jail Reentry Program is where we start establishing with the people in the jail an action plan for when they get out, right? So that they're going out in the community with some sort of plan and how to get a hold of us so that we can help them along the way as well. So that's what we do in the jail. All the share shelters, including Men's Share House, Inn at Orchards, and the Share Homestead. So we go in there and we talk to the different participants that are at Share on how can we help, and I'll talk about a little bit about what we do as far as helping. Open House Ministries, Path Resource Drop-In, that's at the Lutheran Church where they have the daily meals over there on Grand Street, right down from the Lord's Gym there. So we show up there as well. Community Services Northwest, Vancouver Housing Authority, and North Star Clinic at Columbia River Mental Health. And the North Star Clinic is the methadone maintenance clinic or whatever they're using as well there. There's, things change up as far as what people are using to help people recover. So
they self-select. If you go to the jail and you give an orientation, then people can choose to sign up or not?
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
So for all of these, it's kind of a
self-select. Yeah, and we get referrals from all the case managers at each of the individual places. So, you know, it's kind of good to have a cornucopia of things you can choose from in this community, and we have that right now. So that's it. And then I brought this. This is a weekly, on Monday mornings, I put out a job leads, where I go on and spend some time Monday mornings searching and looking around and meeting with other case managers and find out that the jobs that are available in the area for clients that are at different levels, you know, because our clients come at different levels of participation in their own life. So, you know, some of them are receiving funds for Social Security disability so that therefore they can only work 15 hours a week, right? And some people are looking for full-time jobs. Some people are looking to just get into jobs, you know, but they all have disabilities that we're working with. So as we put this out to the community, and I mail it out to about 349 different people and agencies in this area each week who receive this and use this for their clients as well. Yes?
Can we, because I'm on that list, can we share that? Can I forward that to families that I work with?
You can forward it to anybody you want to.
Okay.
I mean, that's we're a community organization. You know, we're trying to help everybody and lighten the loads on whoever we can lighten the loads on in this community and help this program continue and other programs continue. So I'll pass this around. I should have brought enough for everybody in here to look at. But if you give me your email address, I could forward it to you as well.
That would be great.
Yeah, and it's a good thing. And so on the front of this, it has all the information about the different employment agencies and different places in the area that people can go to use computers. And, you know, and that we're not the end-all, be-all, but we're somewhere along that line of helping people. So putting out there to the people in the community the other places that do what we do as well, right? But might have a different niche. So, and so it goes through and lists all the jobs, and of course the felony friendly jobs are in here as well, you know.
When I've looked through that in the past, David, there's on Craigslist, kind of all kind of the gamut.
Yeah.
Do you go in and find, which is incredibly valuable?
Every Monday morning, that's what I do when I get in. I just start going and looking at each different website that's available out there.
Yeah.
And some of the clients that I'm working with, I know, and I've already done the assessment on them. I can say, oh, yeah, they're looking for this kind of job.
Okay.
So I can put more of those jobs in there like that, as well as, you know, we have people that might have mental and emotional disabilities that have doctorates or master's degrees and things of that nature that, you know, are maybe facing where they've been out of the work for a couple of years because of their depression or whatever might happen, you know. So we put a lot of different things in here that are tailored to helping people get maybe back into their old jobs and or maybe try a new job. So it does give a lot of information in this packet, as well as different local companies that are more than likely to be hiring regularly, as well as all the staffing agencies in this area is listed on here. So where they go and they go to work for the day, maybe they get their money on a card, where they can actually, you know, have money that afternoon and things of that nature. So the different staffing agencies, there's a lot of information in here that can be had, as well as all the places that you can go online, Cody Staffing, the Vancouver Public Schools, all their websites are listing here, the City of Vancouver, where people can go on and look at other jobs as well. And then, of course, my contact information on there. So I'll just pass this around and have people kind of look at it as we go.
When people go to get the job, do you go with them or help them ahead of time, or are they on their own to do that?
Well, that leads me into the next little thing.
Perfect segue.
Perfect segue. Very good. Thank you. So Hope Change Employment Navigators. We help, this is what we do. We help individual work searches. So I help with individuals. Of course, I bring somebody in, I do an assessment with them. I find out what experiences they have. And from doing that, then we can start to prepare a resume and get people started to go out there and find a job. So it's hands-on. It's first getting to know people and then, you know, feeling what we could do the best way to help them to obtain what they're looking for, you know, and get them ready for that. So we help with applications assistance, interest testing, where we find out, you know, what they're really interested in, job interview preparation, and I have a little tool that I have that I've gathered from all the different places around the area that gives some interview questions, you know, and we start preparing them for getting an interview, you know. You know, some of the common questions is, tell me about yourself. What's your greatest strengths or weaknesses? What do you know about the organization? So sometimes people need to apply. You know, I meet people where they're at. And I mean we meet people where they're at so that we can find out, you know, where they want to go. Are they able to actually start that job right away? Are they able to walk in and find out what it's like to even get an application and do that? But we prepare them for that by you know, doing these interviews and these mock interviews with them so they get more comfortable with sitting down with somebody. So resumes, I help with their resumes. I take all that information down. I build a resume and I send them out there prepared. Transportation planning, thank goodness the bus passes are back in play right now, because they were out of play for, we couldn't take on any new clients for about 4 or 5 months, you know, which was a lot, and that's through Human Services Council, who everybody in the area applies for these bus passes, and people have to be doing at least 4 interviews a week in order to receive these bus passes. And so for somebody that doesn't have any money or car or has lost their license or a different economic status is that bus pass means a lot, and it helps them to get out there and put themselves out there and to get to and from places that they need to be. Work readiness assistance, we help buy tools for people, we help get them ready with their clothing, ID cards, just many
food
different
handlers cards.
Yeah, food handlers cards, you know, we come right here to sit up there and, you know, bring somebody down. So I think the biggest part of employment is getting people ready to actually present themselves. Wouldn't that be true? You know, sometimes haircuts, if they want a haircut makes a person feel a lot different. So that's what we do. And so the job leads I do, community resource linking, development is where I go out and help them. I can literally, which makes us different than a lot of the agencies out here, and literally put somebody in my truck and take them around to do the interview. You know, take them around to put in applications. So that's a different way that we approach the community. And so it's more of a hands-on. So I've been with the person from the time I meet with them to getting them ready to find out what they really want to do to start and get them to putting applications at the actual spots they want to work at. Mm-hmm. Right?
Dave, can you talk a little bit about how you work with the employers, like what you do when you go in? Because I always find it interesting, and it's not something I'm super good at, even after 20 years. But Dave has no problem with it. He is a superstar at going in and talking to the employers with the client or before. Like even last night on your way home, you were going to talk to an employer for a client that had an interview or was going to go apply today, I guess is what it was. But can you talk a little bit about how you approach that?
Basically, I like to get in people's business. And that's what I do. I walk in and find out what a company actually does, you know. And I talk to the employer, you know, what do you guys do here? What kind of employer are you looking for? Are you willing to work with this kind of person? Are you willing to work with this kind of person? The person's got a record, maybe a colorful background, you know. Are you willing to give them second chances? And I find out who the people are, you know. And because I think that makes a big difference when you go to get a job is how's the person going to react to the people that you're bringing in, right? So I have some sales background. And so I get in there and I kind of find out who they are. That way, when I go down, I can take the person in and I can introduce them, maybe have them look at what the company does, because a lot of times people go apply for a company, they don't even know what the company does. They're just applying for a job. But it's more impressive to walk in to somebody that's, you know, has a company and say, hey, you know, this is what you guys do. You were established in this time, and, this, you know, this is how long you've been working. And so that's very helpful, especially down here at Columbia, the plant down there. They really, that's one of the questions they ask. Do you know what we do? You know, so it's kind of interesting. So education and training and resources is pretty much having to do with, you know, helping people understand and set up an email, you know, so that I have their resume so I can sit down with people, we can do all the online applications, so I have them come down to the office, we get in the room, in the computer, and we can sit down and we can fill out, you know, 5, 6, 7 application in a couple hours time, and you know, they have a send-off, and then they have an actual way to get that, you know, response back and get going, you know, even helping people with phones, you know, and sending them to the proper agencies. Because, you know, it's knowing what agencies do what in this area that helps me be a better employment person. So, like I say, I've gotten a lot of people's business around town, you know, and find out what they do and how they help people. And what the rate is, you know. Just having a phone sometimes, you know, is part of that process to getting people employed. You know, everybody has a phone, you know. Even if they just get a text message, that's important. So,
what age groups, what's the youngest you work with?
Oh, geez. I had a young man that had come from a youth program in the area, Options Youth Program. Mm-hmm. And he was 18.
Have to be 18
in order to for us to work with them, But he had never had a job before, you know, and didn't even know how to walk in the door and say, hello, my name's so-and-so, how do you do, you know, and can I get an application? He was very sensitive, you know, so with that young age group like that, where they've never really been out there, maybe had worked for their aunt or their grandfather or something, but never really experienced actually employment. So I helped that young man get his food card and actually pre-talked to the lady down at one of the fast food restaurants here. And so we got him started on fast food, right? And so she was a really nice person for him to work with because she understood that she was working with a young man that had never worked before. So they clicked pretty good together. And so since then, we put out and did a lot of job applications around. And now he's been working at a security. He's been doing security for quite a while now. So he's been about a year there, I believe. So he's doing well.
Can I ask you a question, Dave? I'm developing a curriculum. It's called Life 101. And what I've learned basically is that a lot of folks who might be looking for work, I feel like sometimes programs in the past have done, well, just go get an email and just go do your resume and just go do this.
Yeah.
But what I've learned is that they truly just don't know. Some people just don't know how to do those basic things.
Absolutely.
And so what I've learned through developing that and through helping those families is that it's going through just those basics, exactly what you're talking about. So I'm really grateful to hear that you're there with them setting that up.
Yeah,
it's not. Here's how to do the phone.
It's not a cookie cutter.
Exactly. Do you feel like that, what am I trying to ask? Is that a key component of really identifying for that particular individual, here's the strengths and weaknesses, here's what they need? They probably may not feel comfortable just walking in somewhere and asking for an application. So what's your biggest challenge related to that part of it?
Well, I don't know if it's such a challenge or an exciting journey with this person, you know, because you know, finding out who they are and sifting through the different disabilities that they might have been dealing with and how the community has reacted to them with that disability. I think personalizing is the big thing, is that people aren't cookie cutter. And I found that nobody's really a cookie cutter person, you know, and they have their little quirks and such, and getting to know that and being able to present that to their employer, and then maybe going back and checking on them and finding out and having that relationship with the employer along the way helps people retain their jobs.
Well, the other part that I'm really getting a strong message from you about is that it's really important for you to establish that trusting relationship with them
from
the get-go.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's a key component.
We get individuals from Community Services Northwest that have been referred to us that maybe this individual has been abused a lot of their life, you know, mentally, emotionally, physically, sexually, you know, there's been a lot of different things happen, and so they're quite leery of putting themselves in situations. So I think, you know, understanding what, I knew nothing about Asperger's, autism, you know, and what that looked like. So we work with people that have those things, you know. It's been a growth experience to just finding out and talking to that individual. Probably, I'm telling them, I don't know about Asperger's. We're going to have to learn, and you're going to have to teach me along the way. And I think being personable with people like that kind of helps them to become more comfortable.
Empowers them too.
And then it becomes a good time.
Yeah.
You know, I tell people all the time, you're going to mess around and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's pretty much how I meet people.
So then, as far as the follow up goes, after they've started that job, you mentioned that you go back and check in on them. Do you do kind of some coaching around how to keep a job, what to do when a conflict arises, what to do when your boss talks to you about being late for the third time, you know, that sort of thing, how to react? Do you do some job coaching too?
I think the initial establishing the relationship with people leads to them being able to be open enough with you to talk with you about what's going on.
Yep.
And therefore, and that's both with the employer as well as the person you're working with. So
absolutely key.
Yeah, I think it really is. You know, who wants to talk to somebody that doesn't pay attention to you or doesn't have any compassion? You know, and believe me, you know, there's the learning experience with people are like, you know, we have people that have come back into our program multiple times, and I have to find them another job. Some clients it's every 3 weeks. Some clients it's once every 6 months. What's coming up for them during those periods of time, and how do I need to better educate the employer of seeing a person with you know, autism or something that just gets really nervous and needs just to take 5 minutes away for a second before they come back in and can continue their job. And a lot of employers, they don't, you know, they're there to make money. You know, they don't need any kind of hassles going on in their area, but signs and symptoms of what's actually going on with the individuals and understanding that helps that employer to better work with them, you know. And then it's a trial and error sometimes. Somebody that wants to do this thing, you know, they want to get in this kind of employment, and I help them to get in that kind of employment, they might find out that it's really not a good fit for them and whatever disability they're working with.
I'm really impressed with your passion and everything that you're doing to help folks.
It just seems to me that I get very passionate about some of this too. We're trying so hard to prepare kids in school to be successful, to be, it says, college and career ready. And yet I know that one of our weaknesses is we have more than one, but one of them is personal finances.
Yeah.
We don't do enough in that regard. And the other is this job preparedness.
Yeah.
And I think we need to take some lessons. I know some of our courses in school have mock interviews and all this kind of stuff, but it seems to me that we should be doing some kind of co-work with schools to try to encourage
everyone.
Yeah.
You do it where you are, but we don't do it for our kids.
We do.
They do some of that education.
They do that in education.
But a broad across the board.
Yeah.
And it might be
so as well as in Vicky's office, I've invaded Vicky's office with a cabinet that we have.
Huge, yeah. Cabinet and
yeah, I get
12
clothes.
Boxes.
I get clothes donated for people, you know, not just referring them over to the giving closet or someplace like that to go get some clothing, but, you know, I have some people in the area that donate shirts and dress outfits for women. And you know, these guys are passionate, and these men and women are passionate as well, you know, about making sure that, you know, they're giving back to the community. And so we've got this closet that, you know, all the shirts have been pressed and ironed. So you put a person in a pressed iron shirt, or you put a lady in a nice pant outfit or a dress outfit that makes them feel better, you know. And I think that's part of what I like to do as well, you know. How can we help with that? Dress for success, right? And that's something that we can do as well, you know, as far as where we're at. And we're very small, you know. We're not. I know everybody's number oriented.
How big a staff do you have? Just you?
It's two, but the other staff member that was working in the program for years had to resign her position due to health issues, which she's been very upfront about. And so we're actually hiring.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
We're hiring Dave's sidekick.
Okay. Good to know.
And we've had another, one of my other program job developers has been helping out in the program in the meantime.
Very cool.
This definitely doesn't sound like an 8-to-5 or 9-to-5 job.
Oh, no, ma'am.
Dave works on Saturdays and evenings.
You know, I leave my phone on. You know, you never know what's going on with people. You never know. Yeah, and you do. And you know, I do more than just this in the community. And I like what I do. So, let's go to successes and statistics. So in 2016, we enrolled 61 individuals in the program. We had 29 community employment placements. 17 of these individuals maintained employment for 90 days plus, because we track that through the HMIS system that you've heard. And that's some of the paperwork that I hate to do. I mean, love to do, right? Wages range from a minimum wage to $31 per hour. So far this year, we've enrolled 29 individuals, and I think that's pretty good. 39 have enrolled in the program.
That's the total, so we had 10 carryovers.
Yeah, 10 carryovers. We had 18 community employment placements to date, and wages range from $10, which is now $11 an hour minimum wage, to $18 per hour. And so being the average wage of $12.46.
Do you have a wait list for people to get into your program? No.
Okay. We haven't had a wait list at all.
When do you count them?
We don't let them out. Oh,
no. I think you count them as that.
I think that what happens is as people get going in their life, they get to a point to where either we need to refer them to another program, maybe DVR or something that might have different employers that I might have. They drop off because of their mental health issues or things of that nature. They move out of the area.
Or they're wildly successful
they're
and
wildly
don't need
successful
us.
And they don't need us anymore.
That's what we want.
And that's what we do want. You know.
So impressed.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Any other quick follow-up questions? David, thank you so much. And Vicki, is there anything else you wanted to add?
I wanted to add one success story.
Oh, okay.
Is it okay? Does he have time?
Just got to make it quick.
Okay, just do it real quick.
Okay, so the one I'm going to talk about is we'll call the guy Ben. He came to us from the BHA, Bridget, down there. And his disability was neurovascular. He was legally blind. And he had a big thing that he'd have to get close down to read things with and such. And his wife was going through kidney dialysis, you know, and he had two children. You know, he was on TANF at $706 a month and food stamps at $670 a month. We completed the assessment, the PCC, the resume, did job search with him. Community work, we did job search for weeks, and I went out to Goodwill out on 112th, and I talked to the manager out there and told him about this guy, that even though he was blind, he had more passion to work than some of the people that weren't blind. You know what I mean? He's very passionate about, just help me. I just really want to work, support my family. And so he was hired full-time out there. He's been really happy. You know, he's been out there for close to 2 years now since he started the program. He's one of my first, like, yeah, I help somebody, you know, kind of deals. And so it reduced everything. His food stamps have dropped below. He's, you know, making a good wage. He's got medical insurance and dental insurance for him and his family. He's off TANF. He doesn't get a bus pass. He hasn't asked for a bus pass in over a year and a half.
Nice.
So that's kind of a success story there.
How's his wife doing, do you know?
His wife isn't doing quite well. And I talk to him, and I call people that I've worked with to try to check in with them at least once a month to see how they're doing and what's going on in their life. And his wife's not doing very well at all. So the outcome for her problem is pretty extreme. So it's a day by day.
You'll see this when you read through the report. So we took this, and that's why I support for you guys to do the year-end reports and then include success stories, you know, then we incorporate it into our reports.
Very awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.
Have a good rest of your day.
Thank you.
Do some gardening.
Thanks for coming in and spending the time. We love learning about programs that we're coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
You too. Thanks, David.
That's email words. Thank you.
Yes.
So we would love to hear from Rebecca and Bridget about the conference that they went to. Do you have anything to say?
It was good.
That's
a good conversation.
There were so many opportunities to learn so much about such a diverse array of topics that it was challenging to get to everything you would like to do. And because I didn't have any specific responsibilities to go and do anything, I randomly selected workshops and assignments, and I learned a lot. There was a really good one on systemic racism that I seriously think would be great to do in this community as a collaboration. The instructors were very good. And then it was interesting to learn about tiny house communities and a mental health agency somewhere east that's doing a coordinated intake assessment and assignment out approach. And while we sort of do it here through whatever the program's called, there it's coordinated through a health care provider. And I thought that was an interesting link. It sort of covers some of the, if you like, overhead costs of administration around coordinated intake. So I thought it was very good. There was some interesting, you know, people that you talk to as you, people bring you all sorts of individual experiences to it. So well worthwhile.
Very cool.
Okay.
First off, I have to say that Rebecca picked out a gorgeous hotel.
I did not get it. Well, that is the hotel title.
Oh, I didn't want to go home. It was nice. I got to network with people I didn't know. I got to meet new people. And the one workshop that I liked the most was the SOAR overview of the SOAR training, because I've been wanting to try to get certified to do that. And so I got a lot of information from that, and I really like that. But yeah, I think I like what I'm the most about is just meeting new people and getting new information and networking with people. And it was a fabulous experience. Thank you, Rebecca. I had a great time.
Yeah, the Washington Low Income Housing Alliance really does put on a great conference. It's known across the nation for the work that they do to put the conference on. There's always things to learn. That's why so many of us staff members go, because you know it's really important to go up and learn as much as we possibly can. And it's an opportunity that we like to bring to the CAB board to participate and learn more, because there's a lot going on around homelessness. And I always bring it back, and then I talk to my agencies about things that I want them to do differently.
A lot of best practices at those conferences, too.
Do you know when next year's is?
They haven't released the dates yet. They usually should be coming up pretty soon. They'll note it. It used to be the second week of May, but it sounds like they're going to move it to the third or fourth.
Good.
If they're finding some conflicts of the way.
It's always the same week as the conference that we have to go through for the schools. So.
Yeah. And so they're researching to see when the best week. It'll still be May, like in the same time frame of May. But
if they want to engage school staff more, then somebody needs
to. And that's definitely been a conversation, and that's why they're looking at changing the week that they have the conference.
The Children's Justice Conference is around that same time too.
That's kind of conference season, I think.
Yeah, it's October. May, April, May, and September, October. I'm constantly out of the office.
Very cool. Thank you for the feedback, everyone. And then this is our open forum time. Any public comment or topic or anything that anyone wants to talk about?
I went to the four-week forum with the Council for the Homeless presented.
Oh.
And I have to say, Kate and Andy did a
fabulous job. I learned so much more than I already knew, and I didn't know a lot, so it was great. And they did fabulous presentation. I got so much information, and I talked to my supervisor where I'm worked at Community Services Northwest, and he is asking me actually to do a presentation on what I learned. And so it was fabulous. I learned all four of them, and so much. And then from that, I bounced off over to the severe weather planning committee. And so I'm going to be working on Camas Washougal area to see what I can do. There's four churches out there that I think might help. So I'm in the process of planning to go and talk to them this week. So it's opening more doors because it's kind of just, now that I have more information too that I can help my clients with. So it's fabulous. It was a great presentation.
Yeah, so if you hadn't heard, the Council for the Homeless put together a series of four workshops, mm-hmm. were just education about the homeless system, and they were very well attended. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to attend any of them. Everything hit on days that I had stuff going on, and so I wasn't able to attend, but I had spoken with Kate, so they're very well attended. And then there's also a severe weather planning group, Council for the Homeless, CHAP, and there's somebody else involved in coordinating these conversations about what we're going to do in case of severe weather, which is like what we had last year, but beyond whatever. We already have cold weather emergency services, but this is taking a step beyond there.
Very cool. All right. Anything else from anyone?
I just wanted to let people know that if you missed the data walk portion of the feedback form, if you weren't able to attend, we've been requested to do the data walk for staff, and so we thought we would open it up to everybody and just open it up and actually be in this room, and we'll have all the stations set up in here, and it'll be self-led anytime you want to come. It'll be on July 26th, which is a Wednesday, and it'll just be stop on by. You can take a look at all of the data that we presented and had available at the feedback forum. We won't be taking any more feedback, but the information will be there.
Very cool. So our next meeting is September 12th from 8 to 10. And with that, I think we're done.
You're all invited to come out and pick blueberries.
Thank you so much. Are you overwhelmed?
It's overwhelming, but it's interesting.
Did you remember every word?
Of course.
So I mentioned the minutes or so.
Yeah.
How about you, Anne? Did you learn a little?
I did. Yeah. I yes. I'm not. It is a lot of information. I'll be interested to learn more. Mm-hmm. Actually,
you're always
and find out about the parameters of exactly what it
becomes. It's complicated.
It is, and it takes
years.
A lot of the board members have said at least a year before they get comfortable with what the information is, but it's a constant learning. And it's for us, it's constant learning because we're always looking for best practices and changing things up. For example, the Columbia Rivers Employment Program, so they used to do the homeless employment navigator program, which was specifically for people who were low income or homeless, and they would go in and they would do the light touch of helping build a resume and things like that. And we asked them this last funding round to go towards a supported employment program because it's a best practice and we don't really have that much of it here in our community. And so that's what they're moving towards with this program, is to really provide that in-depth support for people.
And I wasn't aware too that the that Clearview is actually under the Hope Change, or that it's part of the same.
So yeah, so Clearview is the Columbia Rivers employment arm.
Okay.
So they have their main mental health services, but Clearview is their employment side.
Okay.
And then Hope Change is a piece of that, and it's fully funded by this board, by the funding that goes to this board. The Clearview side is the people that go into the Hope Change program are not associated with Columbia River Mental Health Services. Oh, so it's to the it's designed to help people
well,
that
can't.
No. So the Clearview side is for anyone that's engaging in mental health services. If they are eligible for mental health services, then they go into the Clearview side.
Oh,
it's paid
okay.
by Medicaid.
Okay.
We don't pay for it.
Oh.
So ours is for those that are not connected because we don't want to duplicate. We don't want to use our funds for something that could be paid for
by a different. Okay,
yes.
I gotcha.
So this is for people who also have a disability, which is a broad definition of disability, and are not connected. So the supports cannot be paid for by
duplicate.
And he would not necessarily make that distinction.
That would
it's
probably
like
be
just
made
people.
By the.
So Vicky
would do this.
Yes.
Because I noticed
okay.
he did say people who were in the building.
Yeah, that was something else I didn't know. Was like if the methadone clinic could that qualify to somebody who's in recovery?
Yeah,
I would imagine.
I believe so.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
I know.
It would be, I mean, it's basically do they have a disability,
mm-hmm.
and if they have a heroin addiction that they're working to overcome, then they have a
disability. He's working with a high need population that needs a lot.
Yes.
A lot. Yeah.
The more hand holding,
yeah.
more in depth.
A lot of love there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My son had a friend who was very severely Asperger's, but a brilliant computer scientist went to Harvey Mudd. My son wanted to be a science guy.
Well, Harvey
Mudd, sorry. Yeah. Right. Anyway, it's a science math school. And he couldn't find a job because he simply was so disabled in terms of it being able to interview or follow those clues.
Yeah.
And but finally someone from Harvey Mudd hired him because he knew he was a brilliant computer scientist and he
yeah.
could do that kind
yeah.
of thing. But it was such a challenge.
They
know.
Call that the Einstein effect.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's really smart, but the social part of it
yeah,
is
yeah, yeah.
We had somebody out of the Family Center Battleground who'd been placed by just job source or whatever, and there was no appreciation to the fact that this woman was so paranoid about people. She couldn't be out in public. Like, we'd wonder where she'd gone. She'd be hiding in the back office. And, I mean, there wasn't as much understanding then that this was, you know, a severe disability, and it was like torture for her. And to get her tenant, she needed to show up to this job for work. And then they reassigned her because we said, you know, like, we're not helping her because she can't help people.
Mm-hmm.
We should have done more, I know. But they gave her a bus pass to go to some place downtown, and there was no way she could get on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I heard later.
Agoraphobic or something.
And she, just people just.
A lot of
my
our, we have plenty of those families too that are in that same situation that they would rather live in a tent or in a under a tarp up in the woods in North County on someone's property or out in the forest than deal with people in town. Like it's a severe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we want to
tell
the family, but
an eighth grader telling me, you know, we talked
yeah.
about where we want to go now, and she was Asperger's, and she said, I want a night job working on computers.
Mm-hmm.
She was clear enough in eighth grade to know that she could not handle day with
yeah.
working
mm-hmm.
with everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
I tell my daughter she has Asperger's, and she preferred to sit in her room.
Yeah, that's why I'm so shocked.